Good morning again.
Good morning.
Karen's got a good morning.
Okay.
I've got a good morning. Yay.
Okay, so we'll get started with mantra and some prayers. So if you turn to page 34 in the gold prayer book, or the first page of text in the white plastic prayer book, we'll say, Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra at the top three times, and then we'll move into the four immeasurables below that. Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha. Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha. Tayata May all sentient beings have happiness in the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering in the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends, hatred for enemies. And now if you turn the page to page 37, we'll chant the Four Immeasurables in Tibetan, and Donna will lead us with that.
Sam Chen Tom Che Je Wa Chang Je.
Mantras that's written right below. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Do seven green Tara mantras. Thanks. Om Tare Tu Re So Ha. Om Tare Tu Re So. Om Tare Tu Re So Ha. Om Tare Tu Re So. Om Tare Tu Re So Ha. Om Tare Tu Re So Ha. Om Tare Tu Re So Ha. So good morning again. My name's Karen, and I'm a member here and been a student here for a number of years, and I'll be working with Aaron today.
I'm also a student here and have been here a number of years. My mic on?
No.
It's not close enough. And I worked with the children's program for a long time. And now I'm assisting the teachers in discovering Buddhism. So I'm an assistant on Monday nights for that. And Karen is going to set our intention next.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will tell you a little bit about what's going to happen today.
So we'll get our morning started by setting our intention. So first I wanted to just recognize and rejoice in all the things that had to happen for you to be here today. All the supportive people in your life, all the conditions that came together, the safe passage on the road, your car worked, whatever it was that you needed to happen, just rejoicing that that happened for you today. And also reflecting on all the things that came together for this center to exist. From our founders, countless volunteers, and of course our spiritual teachers now and over the last 2,000 plus years, that we can come together in this space and in this community, and that we actually have safety and freedom to think about our inner experiences and how we can cultivate our positive qualities. So that's just amazing. So His Holiness has said that, quote, "Obviously, it is not enough for us simply to believe that compassion is important and to think about, oh, how nice it is. We need to make a concerted effort to develop it. We must use all the events of our daily life to transform our thoughts and behavior. So let's cultivate that strong wish to use this time together to make an effort to transform our thoughts and behavior as we consider what it means to have unbiased compassion."
So as far as the plan for today, we've been doing the same thing for the past couple weeks. While Geshe Gelug's out of town, different people have come up here to lead a discussion based on some talks His Holiness has given and kind of create a theme around that. So we'll have some times for you guys to talk in small groups among each other and share with everybody else as well. Several people have asked when he's coming back, so maybe when Donna comes back in, we can get a good answer for that. So you guys know a little bit about what's coming up. So the next thing in terms of setting our intention, after setting our intention, we'll just do a little breathing, a little settling of our minds. And several weeks ago we did 9-round breathing. That's one we do quite often, and there are a lot of different methods for it. Mine's pretty simple because I work a lot with the children's program. So basically, you're breathing in through your nose, the air comes all the way down to your belly, and then you're breathing back out. What 9-round breathing does is it closes off one channel. So you close your nose so that when you breathe in, all the air comes down one channel, and you hold it in your belly for just a second, and then you switch and close the other nostril, and then the air comes out the other side. You're breathing in one side and out the other by closing your nose, and you do that 3 times, and then you kind of keep your finger on the same side so that you can do that in reverse. So if air has been coming out one side, in one side and out the other, then the next 3 times it goes in this side and out the other side. And then you breathe 3 times just through both nostrils. If you like to visualize, you can visualize light entering your body and cleaning away everything on the inside that makes your mind unclear. Feelings of anger, sleepiness, all that yucky stuff. So the white light's going in, cleaning out all this stuff, and it comes out the other side as like black smoke. But when it comes out, it disappears. So it's not polluting anybody or anybody around you, nothing like that. You're just kind of like letting the light come in and letting everything else come out and disappear. So getting rid of all the yuck. So I'll do a mirror for you. So if you are using your right hand, and we just in the children's program use the index fingers. If you have a different method, you can use that as well. But we start by crossing and breathing in and then going to this side to breathe out. So if you're using your right hand, it'll all be the mirror for you. And again, use your own method if you want. So we'll start. After three breaths, keep your finger on the same side. Last three breaths are both nostrils. So the idea is just to kind of calm your mind a bit. I also had a... Let's try this again. I also had a quote from His Holiness, "There are no strangers, just people who haven't become part of our lives yet." And I've seen this written, "There are no strangers, just friends I haven't met yet, you haven't met yet," but I couldn't find a good source for that version of it. But the idea here is what we're going to talk about, kind of is how we think about other people in our lives, how we categorize them, and things like that. So we get to start talking about friendship. Our topic is unbiased compassion, which kind of gives you the idea that we might be indicating that there's a biased compassion, which I think is kind of interesting, because how could you have a compassion that was incorrect or not beneficial? So we're going to explore some ideas with the labels we use and how we think about others. We're going to start with this idea of friendship, break into groups, and discuss these questions. So I'm going to get you talking early on. So you're just going to describe a relationship with someone you consider a friend. How did this relationship develop? And how do you know this person is your friend? Could you create a definite friendship based on that experience? And what kinds of feelings do you have for your friends? How do you treat them? So not every single person in every single group has to answer every single one of these questions, but you kind of get an idea. And in the end, if there's someone in your group who wants to share with the group, I'll take a couple of people who want to share with the group about kind of what you guys see as a definition of friendship. So this will be up while you guys are in your groups. So don't forget to introduce yourselves. Tell everybody in your group your name. Groups of 3 to 5, maybe slightly larger, might even work. And I'm going to give you time for discussion now. So turn to your neighbor, make some friends. If you can hear me, take 1 or 2 more minutes to wrap up. Yeah. I'm gonna gong it right in their ear. Oh, I don't have a second hand, do I? Oh yeah, I do. There it is. We'll see. It does seem louder. When, maybe if I don't get close to you. One more? All right, so I'm going to give you guys a chance to share with a bigger group if you came up with something really interesting. Okay, so we have someone already over here ready to start. So we'll just take, if something came up in your small group that you want to share.
Raise your hand, who is it?
Oh, I already got a mic.
I gave one to, over here.
So my group, we were talking a little bit about there was a lot of insight into it, actually, which is, it's funny that this came up. I started laughing because I just had to, like, sever a friendship yesterday. So I walked in here, I was like, oh, that's wonderful that we're talking about this. But someone was saying about, like, how they know that that person's a friend is, like, that mutual respect that's given. So when one person stops giving that respect, how that really alters that friendship. Whereas if even you haven't seen that person for a long time and you have known each other before in the past and you still see each other, like that respect that you give one another. The other person in my group was talking about joy, like how the joy is brought from that friendship and whatever joy that looks like and how friendships kind of evolve. Then another person was talking about like different levels of friendship with different people, like how they were friends with like their boss and how they became friends with their boss and kind of how that friendship evolved. And then my kind of take on it was the lesson of impermanence, right? So I've done this meditation on impermanence a lot where I take a person. So at one point I didn't know this person, right? So I was completely indifferent. And then they became my friend. And then something happened and I have deep aversion, like what happened yesterday. And sometimes we have to cut ties with people when there's unhealthy behaviors that are harming. Like, for example, my mind. If I'm noticing my mind is full of either jealousy or resentment or anger, like being able to healthily separate myself from that person and realize that that whole cycle can repeat itself. I can become indifferent towards them again. I can be close with them again. And I may have aversion again. So it can take that loop. And I've seen that loop happen in several of my relationships over the course of my lifetime. So not holding on to attachment towards that relationship so much like I tend to do very, very often. And then I get upset and hurt. So thanks.
Absolutely.
My group, we were talking about different levels of friendship and how for some of us, it's very easy to call someone you meet at a random place and you just start talking to friend. And for some others, it's very hard. It's almost like a relationship right below a level of significant other. It's like a job to keep that friendship going and you have to put effort into it and you can't really just call someone else a friend. We were also talking about different levels of friendship, like how someone you just randomly meet is, oh, I just met that person as an acquaintance. And then you go into, oh, yeah, I kind of know them, kind of a friend, okay. And then you, okay, that's my friend. And then after that, it's best friend. And it's just different levels of it that you can kind of build in your head. It's not really something that some of us feel just happened, you know.
I asked him to help with them. I confused it, Susie. I got two mic people. I thought that would be helpful. Is any other group want to share what they came up with?
In our group, we talked a lot about what are the qualities of friendship. Maybe it's you have things in common with them. You like to spend time with them. You trust that person and they trust you. You have each other's backs. Sometimes it's just showing respect for somebody when they make decisions that you don't agree with or that you think are bad for them. And then sometimes it's stepping in when a friend is making decisions that you don't care for. And sometimes friendship is something where you're not getting something from it because your friend has a lot of need, and so being a friend is continuing to have their back even when it's not really very satisfying for you, but they're processing something. So,
did I miss anything?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do one more over here.
This got me to thinking about, excuse me, about my own life. Many years ago, I used to be an extreme introvert. Oh, all you had to do was look at me and I'd sweat and turn every shade of red there is. And that's not an exaggeration. Over the years, as I developed a better relationship with myself, a better understanding of who I am, I began to be more accepting of others. So now I can walk up to a stranger, talk with them, and treat them like they're my best friend in the world. I really appreciate people. Now, that's not to say that I'm in favor of a lot of things that are done. I don't wish harm or anything like that. But I appreciate people. I am grateful to know that we all have the opportunity or the ability to improve ourselves if we desire to do that. I like going into areas where I don't know anybody and just start talking with people. And so, as was mentioned earlier about the various levels of friendship, I'm grateful to know that anyone can become a good or best friend in the right circumstances. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been coming here for a little while, for quite a few months, and I consider everybody here a friend because of the commonality of desires and beliefs coming to the center. Now, granted, I don't know a lot of you. Most of you, I either don't know or know very little. But nevertheless, I'm comfortable here, and I appreciate that. So I think for myself, as I become more aware of myself and more developmental of myself, my relationship with people, with others, becomes stronger. Thank you.
Thanks. So I heard a lot that relates to what we're going to talk about today, especially in the first comment, kind of how relationships can change, and a lot about how our friendships relate to how this other person relates to us. What things do we have in common? What things do they have in common with me? And it could be how you're helping. But no one said, trick question, I don't have any friends, all sentient beings are exactly the same. So we do have something to talk about. It wasn't a trick question. It's a good thing, and I definitely don't want to imply that friends are not positive things, because they are. I think the thing is that we're going to do is kind of look a little bit deeper. So what happens when we look at our mind and the relationships with our friends? Next slide. Friend, enemy, stranger. This is these words that we talk about. I picked a photo that was like super hyper. Like, we're those two people in that photo are definitely going to be friends forever. So we use these labels, friend, enemy, and stranger, to describe our relationships with others, probably based on what they do or don't do for us, or how appealing or not appealing they are to us. Venerable Rabina, is reading some stuff that she said, said that we can go beyond these labels, that our hearts can grow in genuine love and compassion. So we do have love for our friends, and there is love there, but it's unstable because it's partly based on attachment. So she says attachment is a bunch of neurotic, she really likes that word if you've heard her before, neurotic, meany thoughts based on me. Love is a bunch of altruistic thoughts based on the other. So these things are kind of mixed, and we kind of go back and forth. And that's what is the reason why people can be our friends and later be our enemies, or they go from strangers to our best friends. And that's sometimes a gradual thing, like you were talking about. But our job is to look a little bit more deeply at that. How does that happen? And just to get more clear on what is our genuine love and compassion, and what is maybe mixed with attachment, or in the case of enemy, aversion. A few of the things I'm going to say are from Venerable Chupten Todren's website, specifically the page Friend, Enemy, Stranger. She points out how we do these things when we're not even realizing we're doing it. So our normal way of thinking is, somebody does something really awful, and they're an awful person, and anybody who looks at them sees that they're an awful person, and so therefore it's completely justified that they're awful, and it's subjective, and that person is out there as an enemy. If I ever think that I don't do this, then I could just read some political news and notice what comes up in my mind, and there are some things that I'm pretty sure in the moment they pop up are really objective, and they're probably not. But if we really examine and look at how do we get these categories, because we didn't know anyone when we were born, we didn't know anyone. And so our discriminating mind starts pointing out, this person did nice things for us, this person's our friend, other situations we don't like so much. Enemy is a word that I've never really been fond of in this context. Geshe Tashi Searing said, we're much too civilized to label these people enemies. So I like that. I feel like I'm too civilized. But there are people that upset us a little more than others. Maybe they aggravate us, or they annoy us, or we kind of try not to be around them. We avoid them, things like that. So we'll stick with the word enemy, because that's the word that's typically used. But in your mind, know when we say enemy, it doesn't, you know, it's not someone that we're battling, but it's, you know, if this person walked in the door, you might feel a little bit tense, or a little bit stressed, or a little bit, you know, your heart might race a little bit, that kind of person. Everybody who doesn't impact us one way or the other, that's a stranger. And the criteria for these typically is how they relate to me. So they either please me, so they're my friend, or they make me afraid, then they're my enemy. They give me things, that's my friend, and then they notice my faults, or they criticize me, and so I'm going to put them in that enemy category. But it's typically pretty subjective. So think about, as we go, people in your life, specific people, one of each of these, because we're going to use them in a meditation. Think of someone who you consider your friend. You probably already did that. Someone who makes you a little stressed out or apprehensive, or maybe they're your full-on enemy. And so for stranger, we'll talk about that one in a bit. But next we're going to listen to a video from His Holiness, and he's talking about unbiased compassion. And I'm going to have you guys talk again after this video, and then after that we'll spend some more time just like meditating. So during this video, some things to think about as you're listening, and it's pretty short, but who do we usually have compassion for? So compassion is this wish that other people don't have suffering, that we want to do things for them, that, you know, we want them to not have any problems. And is there any problem with the way that we choose people that we have compassion for if we do that? And what kind of compassion does he suggest that we develop? And then in your day-to-day life, you notice feelings of affection or anger towards others. And where do those feelings come from? Are they coming from the other person? All right.
This is our video. I think I might be able to do this.
Non-compassion. As I mentioned yesterday.
We'll wait for the lights to get off. It's pretty short, so. Ah, there we go.
Non-compassion. As I mentioned yesterday, I think yesterday, the compassion, sense of concern of well-being towards one's own friend, those people who really show to you positive. That sense of concern is, as I mentioned there, biased. Actually, very much involve attachment. So as soon as attachment develop, that unrealistic attitude, biased, and the biased, limited attachment often bring hatred. Clear? A compassion which we want to promote is this unbiased compassion. That compassion, once we train not only towards one's own close people but also enemy, because the biased affection or compassion mainly oriented other sort of action towards me, good, positive, friendly, so I love them. These people harm to me, negative action towards me, so instead of affection, feel anger. The other unbiased compassion not oriented their action or their attitude, but simply they are also sentient being or human being. They also want happiness. They also have every right to overcome suffering. So on the basis of that kind of awareness, then develop genuine sense of concern. That's unbiased, right? No, unbiased compassion. Genuine compassion. Here, no attachment.
And just his delivery is so awesome, and he gets so much in there in just such a short time.
Mind, yes.
All right. So we're going to do small groups again for this discussion, and it can be exactly the same, or you can mix it up a little bit. So from what you were thinking about from your friends to what His Holiness is saying about how we show compassion and how we develop compassion, does this, what he's saying now, give you any other thoughts? How would you answer these questions? You do a great job in a small group, so that's all the direction I've got. Go for it. All right, if you can hear me, we have one more minute. Just take one last minute and kind of try to wrap up your thoughts. Yeah, it's the last video. Should we make sure we get to the last video? It's only 2 minutes. I'll make sure we get to it. Oh yeah, that's nothing. Thank you. All right, we're wrapping up. I went to that too. Does anybody have anything they want to share from that discussion? We have one over here right next to you.
So I think, the middle way is one of the basic Buddhist beliefs. I think that you have to look at it from a higher perspective and take yourself out of the equation, because it's attachment for friends and
aversion
for enemies, and it's because you're looking at it from the ego, because that arises out of a conception that your ego has about someone, like what you do for me, or I don't like something that you did to me, so I'm going to avoid you. So I think you have to look at it from a higher perspective.
Hey, one thing we were talking about was an experience I had this weekend, and then to relate it to the rest of the discussion, you'll see it in the newsletter tomorrow. But there's a family, I don't know if they're here, but they brought in their three boys and Precious. He comes in all the time to meditate, and so the children came in, and I didn't know the children, so I bent down, and I just, for some reason, didn't say, what's your name? I just said, and who are you? Kind of was in his face. And he waited, and he looked at me. He didn't just answer right away, which was interesting there, and so I thought he was being shy, right? And he tilted his little head, and he said, I'm your friend. And I'm like, oh, my God. So the thing that just has hit me this whole week, or since that moment, is that he wasn't thinking about himself, or he wasn't thinking about what I could do for him. I mean, he was little. We all start out pretty innocent, most of us. And so it seems to be exactly what His Holiness is saying, is the reason he doesn't meet a stranger or an enemy is because he doesn't care if you like Trump or not. Like, wouldn't it be funny if he cared? Wouldn't it be weird to think of of His Holiness saying, I don't really like that guy, so I'm not going to talk to you. That would be weird. So that feeling of unbiased is, we're not there yet. That's why we all agreed that's why we're here today. So that it's okay that we do whatever we need to do when we need to do it. But that knowing that gauge, as Jack was saying, like knowing that you need to do this and you need to do this along your way and being healthy for your mind, but that we're trying to see everybody as a friend and, as you just said, with a higher plane instead of for what they can do for us.
Yeah.
Compassion... towards others, the challenges I find are the ways in which I can't have compassion for self, seeing something in someone else that I couldn't stand to see myself do, or that I haven't done before and that I can't understand or fathom. And then secondly, difficult when I'm not rested, something I forgot to mention, but this idea of both not being so attached to what the self needs and paying attention to the needs of others, but also paying attention to what the self does need. Because I find, like, when I'm in school full time, when I'm not, it's the summer, and I feel I can be better to others. And when I'm in school and working really hard, I feel I'm not as good towards others. I find that as I hurt myself, I can no longer be of best service to others, and be compassionate and see what they need. Yeah.
Right. So looking for the conditions and making sure that, there's some wisdom to it too. There's two wings. Is your first comment that it's hard to relate it's hard to show compassion when you can't relate to the actions of others?
Or when you can relate really well, but maybe you haven't accepted that about yourself. Like, you won't allow that to take place in your life. Maybe you need it, maybe you want it, but you won't allow yourself. So you see someone else doing something that you really want or really don't want, and you can't stand it, or you, you haven't reconciled how it could be okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Who else? We have one over here.
One of the things we were talking about is just noticing that, like, we never understand what someone else has been through fully. So in that way, we can't find, or we can't judge them as an enemy or sometimes even as a friend because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I thought about, which I read, is it was like every person's decisions is a mixture of nature and nurture. So for us to say we would do differently in their shoes is wrong, because if we had their genes and we had their experiences, we would make the same decision, because that is how decisions are made. So kind of just noticing that and seeing that you can't judge somebody as wrong for that or see them as an enemy for that.
Right. Okay, well, I definitely want to save time for meditation, so thank you for those comments. The quotes that I kind of pulled out were, you know, who do we have compassion for? It's friends, those who show positive action. So His Holiness used the word action a lot. So we're looking at the actions of others and determining whether that makes, then figuring out how that relates to us. And those who are good and positive, well, I love those people, and they're negative, and then I feel anger. Maybe when we don't even we could take that to another level, like the comment over here, and say, well, we wouldn't have done that, but we really don't know, you know. The problem with biased compassion, His Holiness said, it could bring hatred. So compassion is based on their actions, and we had a comment early on, actions change, you know. People change, the way they relate to us changes. So now our compassion, we're choosing to be compassionate based on something that's changing, that's pretty unstable. The kind of compassion that's unbiased is simply because they're a sentient being. You know, it's not in relationship to their actions and how they're treating us. So we have a lot less opportunity to get really upset if we're basing our compassion on the fact that they're sentient beings. Unbiased compassion starts with equanimity. So I have a picture of rain here, because Venerable Thupten Chodron, I just thought this was a nice way she said it. A rain cloud pours equally over the area. It doesn't fall over here and say, well, I like these plants over here, but I want those plants to die. So the rain's going to fall over here. It just falls evenly. And so in a similar way, somebody who has a mind of equanimity is open and receptive and concerned with everybody. So equanimity is basically what I'm getting into with this idea of unbiased compassion, and a mind of impartiality, open and receptive with everybody. Venerable Bina said that equanimity is a stable foundation on which to build genuine love, compassion, great compassion, and bodhicitta. So if we want to jump all the way to bodhicitta, it's going to be difficult if we don't start by kind of laying this groundwork, by evening out the cracks, by looking at our people that we think of as friends and strangers and enemies, and having a more equanimity in our thoughts about them. Also, I wanted to make sure I found a way to get Mama Tisha in our presentation today. You might have noticed the statue. It wasn't difficult. He had an extraordinary interest in bodhicitta. So again, you know, bodhicitta relying on our great compassion. Bodhicitta, you know, so that when we want to achieve enlightenment, it's because we want to benefit all other beings, that we have compassion for, which is based on our compassion for other beings, that we don't want to see them suffering, which, you know, we can't even start without equanimity. So there's two lineages two different kinds of trainings, both that lead to bodhicitta, the seven-part cause and effect, and equalizing, exchanging self for others. So you might have seen these before. You might have done these before. We certainly do them here at the center in different at different times. But I'm just going to keep making the point that equanimity is the foundation for that. So the great saint Atisha showed extraordinary interest in bodhicitta. In order to obtain the complete instructions, he embarked on this really long journey, 13 months, many, many hardships, went into Indonesia, practiced for 12 years at the feet of his master, and then he began to possess both lineages that are listed here. So great aspiration here. We can all, you know, work up to this. This is just a list of one method is kind of combines those two previous methods into 12 steps. I've seen this listed as 11 steps, and equanimity being a prerequisite for those 11 steps. In this list, equanimity is first. This is the list that we used in Discovering Buddhism that Don Brown gave us in Discovering Buddhism. So I chose it because it's something recent. But this kind of takes the two methods and puts them together. But number one, equanimity. So let's do a meditation on equanimity. what we're going to do is one from The Awakening Mind by Geshe Tashi Tsering. And I also listed at the bottom from Lama Zopa Rinpoche, the Mahayana Equilibrium Meditation. That's one you can find by Googling those words. It's on our website somewhere. It's a lot more traditional and a lot more dense, but it's very, very relevant and helpful. I just thought I'd feel more comfortable leading this one on equanimity. So, like I said, you're going to need a friend to bring with you into this meditation and someone who causes you problems or that disturbs your mind, an enemy, and a stranger. So I found that when I try to think of a stranger, as soon as I think of someone, I already have like a view of them. So like if someone's walking down the street and I don't know them, I'm like, but they're my neighbors. I like them, you know, or whatever it is. But then I realize that when I'm here, I might be walking to my car and somebody might be walking down this sidewalk right here. They walk under the overpass and they walk right by. They're not my friend. And I can't even really get a full view of them, because I just didn't pay that much attention. I'm pretty indifferent to that person who walks by while I'm walking out to my car here. So to me, that's a stranger. And I thought I had something else. I can't remember what else. So you're going to need those people, and these are kind of, I just have the steps up there that we're going to do, but I'm going to be leading it, so you should be able to just kind of follow along. So we'll start by just taking a few breaths. So slowing back down, we had a lot of good conversation, but we are going to just quiet our minds, take some breaths. So you do meditation with a straight back, but it shouldn't feel forced or tense. So your body's meant to move. Your skull kind of rests on the top of your spinal cord, so it should be kind of fluid. If you let your shoulders drop away from your ears, you straighten up a little bit, but without tension. You want to be soft. You want to feel a bit relaxed. So you're going to start with your friend. You're going to visualize this friend sitting in front of you. So with your eyes closed, this person sitting a couple feet in front of you, probably smiling at you as our friends do. Just bring up the feelings of warmth and joy you usually experience when this person's near. Think about the things that you do together without letting yourself be distracted by a particular memory or story. Just the sense of this friendship. Now explore in your mind this relationship. What makes you feel so strongly attached to this person? Are there ways that you benefit from this relationship? Does this person make you feel intelligent, good, or beautiful? How do those things change? If your good feelings rely on what that person provides for you, you must realize that can change. Our relationships are generally mixtures of love and attachment. And our goal is to decrease the attachment in order to achieve equanimity and understanding. So we work on letting go a little bit of the attachment for our friend. And then sitting next to our friend, we're going to visualize our enemy, or just a person who harms you or bothers you in some way. Be someone you know, it could be a world figure. So don't replay the story of what is really bothering you about that person. Look how your mind reacts. So I like to imagine this person just walks into my house and I wasn't even expecting them. How do I feel? Why do I feel that? Notice how my mind reacts. And see how damaging that reaction, that aversion is. Might be even more damaging than whatever harm it is this person has originally done to you. Separate ourselves from that anger so that we can find it, we can manage it. Like we're separating it from ourselves and from that other person. Now we have our friend, we've let go a little bit of the attachment, we have our enemy, we're separating our reactions, and we're going to bring in a stranger. Someone that is just not that interesting to us. Maybe we're so absorbed in our own story and all the friends and enemies in our story that there's just no time for so many other beings that inhabit this planet with us. Spend a lot of time on just a few people. So when we start to think about why we feel apathy for the majority of beings, we can see how limiting that partiality is. So we start to understand that what we intuitively felt was intrinsic to these, the good, the bad, the neutral, is really a projection of our mind based on how that person has affected us. Now we look at these people and say, well, what are the differences? Maybe they look differently, a lot of external things. What are their similarities? Each of these people probably had a lot of small joys and disappointments through each of their lives. They probably had some very similar experiences growing up or in school or where they are now. Ultimately, sentient beings, their minds are created by delusions, and their deepest need involves attaining happiness and avoiding suffering. The same suffering and happiness that plague us also act as the root causes of their actions. And that is why your friend tells outrageous jokes, your boss bullies you, and the stranger on the train buries her head in her book and avoids eye contact. So we let our sense of equanimity grow. We realize how similar we are once we really contemplate ourselves with others. Relax our concentration. We'll open our eyes. I'll give you a nice sweet bell for that one. Karen, you should probably move on if you want to do the video, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, we don't have time for comments on that one because we have one last video that we want to show from His Holiness. And this one is called The Importance of a Compassionate Attitude. So it's nice to talk a little bit about our true nature and feelings that arise from our true nature. Thank you for the lights.
The compassionate mind is very, very important. Fears, anger, jealousy, these based on self-centered attitude. Develop more of a sense of, because of the caring of others' well-being. Your heart automatically opens. That brings openness, straightforward, transparent, honest. That brings friendship. We are social animals. For individual survival, entirely depend on the rest of the community. So usually, through my self-centered attitude, develop distrust. Suspicion. That brings fear. So more open mind. So no matter what their attitude, what do you say? Develop a sense of concern on their well-being. Then you can keep inner peace. And sense of concern of others' well-being push back on that. I think like bees or ants or social animals, they have no religion, no constitution, no law, but they work together. Nature created them that way. So we are also a social animal. But because of our intelligence, sometimes, and intelligence with short-term interest, narrow-mindedness, and negative emotion, we're sometimes forgetting our basic nature.
Some quotes that I pulled out from that. Or about, you know, having an open heart, openness, straightforwardness, transparency, honesty, those things bring friendship, and that's what comes from the compassionate attitude, a sense of peace. I love when he talks about the sense of peace that you have from that compassionate attitude that is, to use the word we've been using throughout, not biased. Yeah, I think I'm going to do the summary and then we'll do our closing prayers. I think, you know, it's best if you guys come up with your own summary of what this means to you and if you can find any of this to be useful. But true compassion, not discriminating between beings, regarding all equally, just the word equanimity and thinking about that. We can all develop it. And once this feeling becomes apparent, both in your meditative practice and your everyday feelings, you'll realize that this equalization will occur without discrimination or distinction. So at the end of that meditation, there was a suggestion to watch your own behavior as you walk down the street. Find that you connect with certain people and you kind of don't pay attention to other people, or, you know, just constantly going, oh, what a lovely smile. Why is that person in my way? Oh, I like that. But why is that person talking so loud? You know, things like that constantly, you know, as we walk around, that's discriminating mind, right? But we can practice to even that out. So equanimity, the first step, seeing, and then this is also at the end of that meditation, seeing everyone as your dear friends can come later. But equanimity can grow into a boundless compassion. So that's my last thought.
So with that, is this working at all?
I could trade with you if we need to.
The mic. Oh, she's got it.
So on that note, before we read the dedication verses, let's take a moment to recall the motivation that we had at the beginning, the reason we came today. The desire to understand and develop genuine compassion, to help ourselves and those around us, and for the benefit of all beings. And then let's dedicate any positive energy or insight, any positive merit that we've created in this time together towards that purpose, praying that the actions we have just done will become a cause for our enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. And if you turn to the Gold Prayer Book, page 246, or in the white booklet on the back of the first page, we have dedication verses from Master Shantideva. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain a notion of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food, may the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit.
May all
who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. And we'll just finish by saying seven Green Tara mantras. Om Tari Tu Re So Ha. 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 Om Tari Tu Re So Ha.
Thank you. We have announcements, and Donna, while you were out of the room, I told everybody that we might get insight on Geshe Gelug's schedule. Several people have said, when's Geshe Gelug coming back? I don't know if you have anything concrete to share, or if not share that you don't have anything concrete.
Well, Geshe-la will definitely be back by the time Rinpoche is here to teach, which is in just a couple of weeks. He is in town. He's on a break right now. He has come and helped to unpack the Lama Atisha statue, which we are hoping to get consecrated soon, but we don't know exactly when that will happen. We're just starting to get into a very busy period for a couple of weeks, or busy in terms of lots of opportunities to volunteer and help, because because Rinpoche will be here in just 2 weeks, and we're going to be doing a lot of getting the building ready, and then the retreat starts the day after Rinpoche is here, so we've got a lot of stuff going on. There's a little insert inside your bulletin that outlines all the things that you can get involved in. If you're free Tuesday or Wednesday morning, we're going to be stringing malas on Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock, and we're going to be filling the bags that we give to retreat participants on Wednesday morning. Saturday, Susan Daniel is going to be leading us in packing up our storage at the all the stuff that we've been storing for the Light of the Path retreat. It's at a storage unit that's over on the corner of Hillsborough and Gorman Street. Thank you. I want to say Faircloth because that's my side of Hillsborough. And that's at 10 a.m. And they'll be taking everything over here. That's on Saturday, so that on Sunday we can clean the cushions that are going up to the retreat. And also Sunday, right after the teaching ends here, we're going to be packing up some stuff in the Gampa. So come ready to help with that if you can. Also on Saturday, Joey's going to be leading a day cleaning and sprucing up the grounds, getting ready for Rinpoche's visit. Interior and inside, outside and inside. And then we'll also be cleaning up inside at the end of that, at the end of the week before Rinpoche, because we're going to be making a big mess packing up for the retreat. There will be opportunities to volunteer to help with Rinpoche's visit. Linda Saw is here. Linda, stand up so people can see you. She is coordinating getting ready for that, so if you would like to help with Rinpoche's visit, Linda's the one to see. Joey, stand up so people can see you. He's our grounds guy. Susan, stand up so people can see you. She's our packing person. Another really important thing that we need help with is after Rinpoche teaches here, there are some things that need to be wherever he is. So they're here for when he teaches, and then they need to get packed up and go up to Black Mountain for the retreat. And Kim, are you in the room? Oh, right in front of me. Kim has agreed to lead that effort, and so if you can stick around after Rinpoche teaches on that Saturday, that will be very helpful. And then we need drivers who have cars with capacity to take some of that up on Sunday morning. So if you're going up for the first week or for the full retreat and you're leaving on Sunday and you have room in your car, that would be really, really wonderful. And just another thing I'm going to mention, when Rinpoche is here, one of the things that we get to do for a teacher is make an offering to them, and that's a really beneficial thing to do. And so we'll have, and what we offer, a very easy way to make an offering to a teacher is to offer a kata. Thank you, Joey. So a kata is just a silk scarf, and it's just a symbolic offering. And the key word here is offering. If you were going to a birthday party, you wouldn't borrow something to give to the person and then expect it back. And so we do get the katas back because the teacher is very kind. But it is meant to be actually something that you are offering. So we do often provide katas that you can borrow, and that's a wonderful thing. But it's also just meant to be something that's coming from you. So we're going to have katas available. We do have katas available in the bookstore. And when is the bookstore closing? Oh, yeah. So you want to get them before August 14th, which is a week from tomorrow. In the past, we've sometimes had them available in the bookstore when a visiting teacher is here, but the bookstore is also going to close up and go to Light of the Path, so there won't be katas available on that day. And
you want to demonstrate.
Kim's going. Oh, you want me to demonstrate?
Yeah.
Well, okay. So you. So you unfold the kata, so it's open. It's most auspicious to have, this is already folded lengthwise, it's most auspicious to have the fold facing you and the open side facing the teacher. That just symbolizes that you're open to hearing the teachings from the teacher. And I'm going to pretend that Aaron is the teacher. So you hold it in your hands like this.
And then you just offer it to the teacher, and the teacher will give it back to you like that.
So,
Elise has an announcement. So
I just have one more opportunity, and that is, you know, many of us are do year-round help and work and study, and we're embarking on a lot more of that the next month. So to prepare, the women of this community are having a Dharma Chicks pool party at my house this afternoon. And all of you are invited. All of you who are female, that is. And Dharma Chicks is meant to be time to play. Play is so important, and it's something that we push into the closet. Play, what's that? Play is important for our mental health. Play is important for our spiritual health. So even though I don't know you, you're soon to become, move from non-person to person in our lives. So please come and see me out there. I will give you my address, and I hope to see all of you there. And I mean it, all of you women, come on, come, let's play. 4 o'clock this afternoon, and I will be out in the lobby to give you address.
And this is one chick that's going to be at the coop. Thank you, Kim. And if there's not enough opportunities here this morning, here are 4 excellent opportunities for you to practice compassion in action. The first is an ongoing project, the Love Note Project. There are some blank packs of cards by the side door, and we have so far delivered over 900 of these love notes to people who are receiving Meals on Wheels. We're feeding their hearts along with their bodies. Thank you. Keep up the efforts. Yes, it's okay to use your own cards if you want, as long as they are just totally neutral. And other opportunity, we're collecting used eyeglasses outside. We have collected so far over 34 pairs of glasses. Thank you. And these are all going to people who are, there's a free healthcare day in September put on, sponsored by the Raleigh Sight Center, and these glasses will go to people there. Next Sunday after you have all stayed here and volunteered to clean the cushions and help out for the retreat. At 3 o'clock, there is an interfaith event, interfaith prayer service called Building Community. It's an opportunity for you to join people of many different faiths to come together, develop compassion and friendship with one another. It's being held at the Raleigh Baha'i Center, which is in Raleigh near Oakwood, behind Peace College. It's information about this on the web and on the wall by the side door. And then one more wonderful, amazing opportunity to pack meals for the Rise Against Hunger group. They used to be called something else, Stop Hunger Now. And they pack packages of nutritious grain and vitamins that go to emergency places around the world. They're holding a meal packing event on August the 27th, but we really need for you to register online as soon as possible so they know how many people are coming, because they need a certain number of people and a certain number of money donation to pay for the grains that they're packing. And so there's information on the web and on the wall. And if you have trouble registering, just email the person here, Henry Jarrett. There's an email address. Just let them know that you're coming. Thank you, everybody.
So next Saturday is our grounds day, and we just want to invite anybody to come and enjoy the gardens. Come and help us. We're also asking for a donation on plants and so forth that are blooming right now. So if you know of a plant that's blooming, or if you go by Lowe's and you see some rescue plants that you want to buy for the center, please do so and bring them by this coming week so that we can plant them this coming Saturday. Timing, we're going to start around 8 o'clock just because of the heat and everything in the summer, and then we'll hopefully have everything done by 11 o'clock.
And I realized I didn't give a full answer to the question about Geshe-la, because I went right into my to-do list, thinking about myself and not others. So the first Sunday during the retreat, which is the day after Rinpoche teaches, we won't be open. Geshe-la is going to the retreat, but he's coming home on the weekends to teach. So unlike other retreats, we will be open every other Sunday while the retreat is ongoing, and Geshe Gelug will be here, so you can enjoy that. And it looks like Jill's got something to say, so she gets the final word.
Just really brief. So with all the opportunities they're given, this is like an amazing opportunity. Let's talk money now. So just, it's a little awkward, and I'm the chosen one to be awkward about it, that there are so many ways to give. I'm not going to go through what we did last Sunday, but just want to let you know that there's one more opportunity now besides the Lama Tisha statue. So who hasn't seen it yet or knows that what we're talking about? Everybody thought it's kind of big. So that is ongoing, and we aren't quite sure the expenses, but let's just say we wanted to cover exactly what we know we've spent. We would probably need about $5,000 more. So if that's an idea, we're at 50. Oh, drum roll. Who wants to do it? Oh, look. That's a lot of drum rolls. Everybody wants action today. So I think we're at $15,025. So if we have about $5,000 more, you know, whatever we can do is great. That would be wonderful. So while that's cooking, I feel like Seinfeld. So get that world going. The next world is Lama Zop Rinpoche visit donations and sponsorships. So you can sponsor the teachings. It's not just about making money right here. It's about making your connection to the teacher, making your connection to the center, and making your connection to wanting to receive the teachings again for him to come here. So that's an opportunity. You can go online and see all these. You can sponsor the retreat. That's another one. And then if you're new and you've never thought about how just to give in a natural way, like you want to give continually, that's an option too. So this is a lot to ask, but I thought it's better just to say it all, get it out there, and let you know about all the opportunities. And that's it. Have a lovely day.